Okay, so yes, that is covering more IoT stuff. That is definitely the kind of theme of the year. You know, it's like, yeah, I hate saying theme of the year because it's not like, oh, we're going to focus on IoT stuff and then forget about it in a year. No, this stuff still goes on. There's a lot of biohacking stuff like there was last time. Tools still here. Again, we are all in this together. These are all very important subjects, and I wish that we're going to have to retape that door. Yeah, you're good. So yeah, that was that there. So just to fill in before, I was also going to bring in, we have a lot of vendors here in different activity groups, and I really want to bring in, there's a group of actual anarcho hackers that are here. They posted signs everywhere about how terrible Facebook and Google is, and Disney owning everything, and putting chemicals in the water to make the frogs gay, and all sorts of things that crazy people do not want to talk about, acknowledge, or know about. I will hopefully get there here soon in the future, but in the meantime, there's been a bunch of posts in IRC, so I'm going to read some of this. So it seems like the comment covered something that my roommate, who I think is still passed out and must be here somewhere, has an issue with that I agree with, where you have these companies, they really, like, everything's patented. It's not just their software's patented, their hardware's patented, the label on the thing is patented, the people who work on the thing are patented by them, they own them. So, to me, the best way to get a lot of support, get a lot of creative ideas, whether they're fun ideas or ideas for important things like accessibility and usability and consistency, is to make things open source. Or at least just, you put your product out there, you have people play with it, you get inspired by yourself as a company or a group, you add more things with that, and so that way, instead of releasing a product, you're doing a dialogue. And so one of the issues there is, as Satel points out, you're a computer programmer, you want to work on cool stuff, and there's these awesome devices, and you want to work on them, but they're not giving it. It's not like you're even asking them for free. They're not. That was weird. So if you were watching the camera, you'll notice it went back and forth. The wall just shook. That's either air or the Segway track's back up and running. So maybe we'll repeat The Last Hope, where people just randomly, just Segways just drove through our walls. But that'd be exciting. Be kind of a retro throwback, which would be appropriate because at 9 p.m. today we are having the Radio Statler panel. But back to the subject at hand, yes, that, like, you can't get your hands on this stuff to play with. And so there's no creativity. If there's no creativity, the product doesn't evolve. And there's this is why, as much as this is an overused term, I always believe in the concept of the true hackathon. The concept of, like, look, like I said, it's not like we're asking Microsoft to give out HoloLens for free, although if you want to do so, that will begin, like, 1% making up for all the horrible things that you have done. It's not like, you know, we expect to get $15,000 worth of towers for free. Just rent a building somewhere, get a bunch of the devices, be like, hey, come in, look at it, here's the software, poke around, and we're going to do that for, like, 72 hours, and who could come up with a crazy thing, get a free toaster, and that alone will get the juices going. And also, for example, like as they said, it's not illegal if you find a bug, as long as you're not horribly exploiting it for money currently, just submit, let them know, hey, your product kills babies, that should probably not be a good idea. When I did this, that's how it killed babies, you probably can fix this. As we all know, sometimes when you do that, the company freaks out and attempts to sue you, but again, the law dictates, in most cases, and just was warning, I'm not a lawyer, do not take this illegal device, but from all the experience that I've had, you can tell them that they've made a boo-boo, and especially if how to fix the boo-boo, and as with most things, the first step to fixing a problem is to acknowledge that there's a problem. And I'm not just even talking about companies and corporations. This is something that I think that the hacker community struggles with and constantly attempts to improve on, has improved on multiple times in the past. That sort of, you know, even in a No, I'm just talking. Stop it. It's just coming and crashing my thing.
Can I hang up?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, because they had to leave early for a flight, so I have, like, I have like 20 minutes left, and I think guy's coming back. We're just waiting for Johnny Xmas's thing.
So what are we talking about?
No, I was that was subtle. That's long can is long. That's a good protein shake.
And it's warm.
It's warm.
Warm.
Good thing it wasn't already open, because that would raise so many questions.
Not as bad as that weird yellow Gatorade.
Honestly, I actually did not mean to do that while you were drinking, because you the joke thing. I have a bad habit of doing that with people. Like I'm like,
you try to make them spit up on the
microphone? It's like okay, they're not speaking good, and that's when I try to tell a joke, and right when that happens, I'm gonna drink right now. Spit take.
Nothing wrong with a good spit take.
Yep. Well, yep. As long as you're not spilling coffee everywhere, we're good. So, what I was talking about is this very human concept that everyone struggles with, the hack community has struggled with, and to me has in multiple cases improved on, which is that in order to fix a problem, the first step is to acknowledge that there is a problem.
What's the problem?
This is just an abstract thought in general, that if you're someone who is looking for bugs and fixing them, that the absolute first step, even if it's a subconscious one, is to, when a bug does come up, to admit that there is a bug or a mistake or a problem.
Okay.
Once investigation, yeah. Because you, a lot of times, even like a community like this that constantly promotes that, hey, you know, we beat our own drum, we, you know, expressive thought, trying to get outside our comfort zone, we all can easily fall victims to sort of tribalism.
Sure. Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, like the, I know we use this, I'm not talking about this, but bear with me, of like that, you know, there are people I've met where they've tried a bunch of communication software, and Slack is the best thing that works for them, for example.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I've even had good uses as Slack, but the danger is even with a good product of, oh, why do you use Slack? Well, because I know a bunch of other companies that use it, so we're using it. Instead of like looking in to see if it really applies to ourselves and being like, oh, this is a good thing, we should try this.
Just because we've always used it and other people use it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing for you.
And to me, it's like, if you had the opportunity to attempt to make something better, wouldn't you take it? And to me, for the most part, the worst thing that could happen is you just revert back to the old thing.
Is there a lot of effort involved? Because I'm kind of lazy.
Well, that's the thing. I also think like...
People are inherently lazy?
No, I wouldn't say they're inherently lazy. I'd say a lot of people are inherently lazy. Not all people, but a good chunk of them are path of least resistance, you know?
Yeah, path of least resistance. Like, yeah, it works. Yeah. It's good enough.
I also think about... So, have you ever read this... book, it's actually a very short book called Everything That's Good Is Bad For You.
No.
It's so it's done by a guy who he was investigating current pop culture of TV, movies, and video games, especially video games. And one of the most interesting things that he particularly found with video games is that when you look at how the brain computates the visual reaction and the amount of time most people spend on anything from Angry Birds to Legend of Zelda to WoW, or just like any, doesn't matter what genre, like when people get invested into something, even if it's just 5 minutes a day, the actual, it's not a relaxed brainwave pattern that you would see in sort of altered state conscious, like sleeping or daydreaming. It's a very similar alpha brainwave pattern to actively working, like at a desk job, or at a construction site, like actual both mental and even physical exhaustion. So the irony is that we're talking about, oh, I'm playing a video game. In reality, you're actually doing work. But because of the context that you're doing in the work, it's not perceived or it doesn't feel like it is work.
So is that inherently bad, though?
No, that's his argument, is that it's not bad. What he's trying to kind of open up there is that we could possibly make people less lazy if we just recontextualize things. Whether it's better reward or the actual recontextualizing.
Well, video games offer very quick rewards.
Yes.
You perform an action, something happens, and it's good or it's bad, and you immediately get an end result.
It also depends, because I would say that you do get, in terms of like, on a base level, like I push block moves, which you can also technically get in real life, but a lot of people, when they talk about why they like their games, it's funny, cause once again, we're in the video game talk here, it's coming up later on Sunday, you know, a lot of people are thinking of ahead. They're thinking of how are they getting to that next level. I'm an open world game. How exactly do you climb the mountain to the top? And they're for example, I know a lot of kids when they were younger, they got Legend of Zelda. That game did not come with a map. No one knew what it was.
No.
So they literally sat there and spent extra hours, not only explored, taking out sheets of paper and graph mapping where everything
is.
Yeah. Which is a huge work. And ironically, a lot of those friends that do that now, they do network topology.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good at it. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know? So it, they're doing work, but they've just recontextualized in something else that just allows it to absorb it easier for them.
So if you designed a game that people didn't think was work but became work, would that be a thing?
I think that would... It wouldn't be a magic bullet, but I think you would see more of an adoption.
Haven't they done something similar with, like molecule modeling and looking for stars?
Similar.
Where they basically gamified scientific research?
Oh, yeah.
And people do it for fun?
Yep, people do that constantly. I'll give you an immediate one that I've noticed, too. I used to have... Like, this is 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of parents who would come up to me and like, hi, I'm a sysadmin, or I'm a topologist, or I work on the red team at my company, and I have no idea how to explain this to my kids. Like, I have a 13-year-old, an 8-year-old, and they my kids get asked, what does your parents do? And they don't know, they don't know how to
There's
articulate it.
There's no line it, of kids' books called, like, Mommy is a System Administrator?
So here's the fun thing, and then when they would try to explain it, They had a hard time doing it. And so I said, can I do it? I'll tell you how it works beforehand, and you can consent to it. Can I do an experiment? And what I did was, a lot of what the kids had in common, for example, at Zaniac, was they all loved Minecraft. And so I started this sort of regiment where we started building projects in Minecraft, just like, you know, building blocks, just saying, like, build the biggest castle you can with like all the deluxe features, like we're gonna do a judging on this week and who wins. And then the next thing is I would teach them, you know, we would go into different materials, and then I would introduce them to redstoning, or they're doing if for and loops. And then I was like, hey, so who wants to actually, like, you know, we're now doing shared world, but we're only doing our computer. Let's let our friends get on anytime we want and set up it on a server. And so they would go in and do like a, you know, oh, you set that up, you load this client, tap it in, now it's running on there, and it would go online. And I'm like, hey, we can have a lot more fun on the server end and like totally warp the game in cool ways. And they would start doing that. And then I said, so do we want everyone on it? It's like, well, no, there's people, there's other kids in my class that are terrible. I would teach them how to fortify that server. And that, and then at the end, I basically was like, guess what? What you just did there on a base level is what a lot of your parents do, and it clicked.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah. So I like ramped it up by, and this is something that Bia, which I'm going to repeat later, Bia was talking about actually at her talk, was that I found something that the kids were already into, and I incorporated and ramped it up into something that would that'd be more palatable, something that would maybe be a little bit more difficult concept to understand, not even because they're kids, but it's a different
concept.
Field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also another acknowledgement in terms of learning also, too, is that we also have to remember there's no magic bullet. There's multiple ways people learn, and
sure.
You just have to find your way. Yeah.
Some by doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some by...
That's why one of the coolest things that I was ever told by someone who spoke at Roots at DEF CON, Roots is like the kids section for it, is that...
I don't know. Where is that?
It's actually, so it's in DEF CON in Las Vegas. It's its own subdivision.
Really?
Like DEF CON basically at this point is a mega con that has
multiple
conventions
cons,
in
yeah.
it. And they're just the overhead, like we are the monsters.
B-Sides, right, is the thing?
Well, B-Sides is not part of it, but they're just on the same week. So there's Hacker Summer Camp, you go to B-Sides. And then if your boss likes you, you go to Black Hat and fall asleep. And then Las Vegas. That there's not a cool thing. I love the Pony Awards. But let me just turn on the other mics here. There we go. But what was I talking about? Information, yeah. So they speak there. They actually have speakers. They're both kids, and they have some of the adult speakers. And here's something valuable that I learned from them is that you can actually talk about the same exact shit that you talk about as the adult thing. The main difference is, which is, this is why it's actually great to do an audience with kids, is that most kids have not developed or care for, a more developed, like, put in, put out reward system for their attention spans.
Yeah.
So, like, as adults, we are conditioned to okay, I'm going to hear your stupid voice talk for 40 minutes because I know at the end you're finally going to show the source code that I want to see. And we've been like trained throughout life that we're going to put up with that just to get the thing that we want.
Delayed gratification.
Kids don't have that yet. Yeah. So it's actually a great way to like distill to exactly what your talk is about. And like by doing that, you can actually make it when you talk to adults even better.
Hmm.
And that's something that's like, wow, I never even thought about it that way. And that's what I've actually been doing recently with a lot of my projects, when, like pitching it to like the Jersey City Council. Speaking of which, we have someone from Tool here. You might recognize him from before. It's our favorite guy. Say hi.
Hello.
Hello there. So how's Tool Booth here this morning? It's been here all con. How has it been going Friday and Saturday at Tool?
Well, people are running a little bit slower today than they were yesterday. I don't know why. Imagine that.
Lack of sleep, Cards Against Humanity.
Could be. Not enough caffeine.
Not enough substances to wake up.
Right, exactly. I'm still communicating with people that are crashing at my place.
That's fine.
That haven't gotten down here yet.
Yeah. I can't even exit this booth this more, so I think I'm literally going to sit across from the info booth, and if Neil wants something, I'm just going to blink Morse code to him.
Yeah, no, you got these like, two pillars over here. You could put a hammock between them, and you could nap here.
We can barely keep up the walls as it is. I don't think that would be the best idea right now.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I got to admit, you know, we were doing our setup on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. It was all day Thursday, but I got here Thursday night, and it was looking like, oh, my God, this is never going to be done. And it really worked out great. By Friday morning, it was all together, and everything was a madhouse with people and badges and wristbands this year. And the first Lockpick Village Lockpicking 101 class, which we're doing down here for free, every hour. So if you've never picked a lock, come on down. We got the picks, we got the locks, and we got the education for you right down in Lockpick Village.
Education, just right there.
Education, everything you need. And on Friday morning, we had one of the largest groups I've ever seen taking the Lockpicking 101 class. It was like the bus opened up and let everybody in. It was incredible. And one of the things that's been a little bit different this year than other years with Hope is the ages. I'm starting to see the next batch of hackers, mm-hmm. and they're starting really, really young.
I remember, actually, I was looking in the chill area yesterday, and I was like, is there some type of kids program going on? Like,
yeah.
There was a lot of, like, not
3 or 4 year olds.
Oh, they're 3 or 4 year olds. A lot of like young adults, like didn't know where they came from.
I've been since Hope Number 9 have been advocating for like not necessarily making its own section, but to like have kind of more activities being focused on like a 17 and younger sort of crowd here. Because one of the things I like about Hope is that I like that things are a lot more integrated. Things like flow into each other and stuff. So like not have like a separate kids section, but just like more topics and activities throughout the thing, of just like keeping in mind that we're now seeing this next generation come up, and I'm like, we better figure this out now because we're all getting older and it's not stopping, and these kids are not going to stop getting older and being made, so we're going to have to deal with this sooner or later.
And I saw a lot of this at, you know, ever since they started, we were just talking about the way you positively spin things or negatively spin things. Mm. This is done in politics and the news all the time.
Yep.
Or like if you take the line from
we're good.
The what's the thing with the Wizard of Oz play that they got the musical? Wicked.
Yeah.
There's a song they do where it says that one man's liberator is another man's terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can refer to the same thing two different lights. Well, hackers seem to be now makers.
That is a good point.
This is mm-hmm. this is a really positive spin on people that are curious, because when I was young, being curious, you heard the saying, curiosity killed the cat. Don't ask questions, just accept it the mm-hmm. way it is. And I wouldn't accept that. I just could not accept that. I would take apart things. I would break things, sadly, but I would want to know what made them work. I was very, very curious, mm-hmm. and that is the core at mm-hmm. every hacker. Why does this work this way, or why doesn't it do this, or why can't it do that? And these kids are being fostered to have this the curiosity and creativity, and their parents are allowing mm-hmm. it because maker space,
yep.
maker makers in general. Maker Faire last year, the number of kids running around was incredible.
I've noticed that over the last 5 years or so, or maybe more than that, decade. It went from older people building cool stuff to it's like a family event.
Yeah,
right. And if you go to a science museum, at least 10 years ago,
this is so relevant comment.
You'd see these kids running around and just pushing the button to see the light flash, but they didn't care about the technology.
Yeah,
these kids, most of them, care about the technology. Yeah. They're actually wondering why it does that, and they're learning, and it's wonderful to see.
I can't remember because I was in such a haze during that time. If you were actually at the tool booth for this, but one of the recent things that that DEF CON 201 did, funny you mentioned Science Museum, was there's an initiative in the state of New Jersey that's called NJ Makers Day. It's 2 days, a Friday, Saturday, every March. It's random each year, where libraries and facilities get to, for free or slow payment, open up to teaching and promoting STEM and STEM activities for kids.
That's
and
awesome.
Families. And so I don't... So Jack says that I'm the reason why, but everyone helped out with this. And I don't know how we did this, but we managed to convince the Liberty Science Center to host ours. And they get a bunch of people involved. We had the VCF there. We had Tool there.
We had the drone flyers out there, the New Jersey Drone Users Group.
Yeah, and the nuts part, too, was we broke a record for their... Because we had no expectations. We thought, honestly, our DEF CON 2, we thought, this would be cool. It would be, 300 people max. We had 3,743 people there.
That's amazing.
And just a mixture of parents and kids and how active these kids are. Funniest thing, by the way, we saw there, we had a payphone at the DEF CON 201 booth. This 10-year-old comes up later, he's like, I'm so sorry, my dad's always been like this, I apologize. Because he dragged his kid over and he's like, do you see that? Do you see that thing? Do you know what that is? You don't know what that is because you was born 4 years, but do you see that thing? That was my life! That is this. And he's just like, I don't know you, I don't know this man.
Speaking of payphones, that's always that's what kind of brought me into the into this whole thing was phones in general. Mm. Did you know we've actually got two new payphones, proper, complete glass booth, door-closing payphones on the street on West End Avenue?
Did not know that, actually.
Yeah.
I'm going to visit that now before I head back to Jersey.
And the funny thing is they're not branded. They're glass and white. Where the branding sign, like, would say that company begins with a V.
Sure, this is not a suicide box.
Well, no, it's not. I went inside, and there's actually a coin-op phone in there. It's not a suicide box. I thought maybe this is a prop. Maybe this is for a movie because there's no branding on the outside.
Because a lot of times when people see new booths, it's actually because they're filming a production where that's the
I know the street level advertising is banned outside of bus stops and phone booths in New York City. So for a long time, the only reason they kept payphones around was so that there'd be branding and advertising on them. Even if they didn't make any money.
Well,
how many of those booths have we seen that don't even have a phone in there anymore, but the advertisement is being updated?
Yeah.
And now all
the
phones are...
It's like the UK now,
Yeah. Well, these two booths are located on West End Avenue. There's a dial tone, 109 and 110. There's two of them.
Nice, yeah.
On the same block. And I actually went to...
That sounds like a movie.
I know.
Two on the same block.
It was so weird, and it's the only
one. I've seen
ones.
That porno.
And I went into one of the buildings, and I asked the doorman, I said, did you guys pay for this? Because it doesn't have branding on it. I've never seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. It's a payphone with glass, and the top area, which is normally blue with a logo, is white. It's white plexiglass, so very interesting thing.
So just kind of bring it back to school real quick. People in the chat are actually asking us, has your area run any contests so far? Like, who can pick the fastest blindfold
We are doing contests. When you come by our lockpicking village, you'll get yourself a little QR code you can associate with your name. Don't lose that.
You want people to scan QR codes, I hope.
We do. It's at the Lockpick Village.
Okay, that's
it. And so we'll scan your QR code, and then you get a challenge, and you have to open up this lockbox. That's got a lock on it, and as soon as you open up the box, get the lock undone, open the box, you push a button on the inside, and the clock stops, and it automatically registers the amount of time it took you to open up the box.
What type of lock?
It's changing. Level 1 was, I think it was a Master 4,
Is that the one, like, the master lock with the layers and the blue bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you,
yeah,
like, pick that by raking it in, like,
well, some people used a some people used a rake. I saw one person use a rake who got really lousy time because it's a new
that's
new lock.
One of the things
I think that's the only lock I've ever opened.
That's why
with a rake?
Yeah, raking it.
Just use a probe. Probes are easy on that one.
That's one of the things I like about lock picking is that, like, while sometimes with certain locks there's, like, better techniques than others, like, everyone has their own everyone has their own style. Everyone has their own style. So the last thing I want to talk about, because I think we're now going to transfer starting a business here. And speaking of business, is that you guys recently had the panel for 2 hours yesterday.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that. That was insanity. How was that?
You know, we went into this thing with, oh my God.
Drunk.
We got a little, but not that. And you know, we're normally 1 hour. It's a 1 hour panel, right? And this year it's like twice that time. We're thinking, oh, we're not going to be able to fill that time with anything of value.
Please.
And we got up there and holy cow, that 2 hours went by really quick.
You had to turn people away at the end from asking questions.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And we had a great time. I don't want to say we're going to do 3 hours next year, but I'm not going to say we're not going to do
it. See, when I saw it, I thought that was just because last con you had like there was like five lockpicking talks. So I thought they were just like, I just give them 2 hours and go. But yeah, thank you. Once again, everyone should totally check out the Lockpicking Village of Tool.
Absolutely.
My mom learned lockpicking and then into it.
Bring your kids.
If I'm stupid and can learn it, anyone can learn lockpicking.
It's mechanical hacking.
Thank you for visiting here.
Absolutely.
And now we're going to transfer to our next show, which is Starting a Business with Deviant and Johnny Xmas.
Deviant? Deviant?